Calling all fun lovers and memory makers. Texas invites you to cheer from our stadiums and dance like no one is watching. Culture seekers can find the art that truly inspires.
Wow.
And from our shopping hubs to our chic boutiques, fashionistas will never leave empty-handed. Texas is an unforgettable experience that's waiting just for you. Visit TravelTexas.com and plan your trip today. Let's Texas.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of The Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Here they are.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. puts them in the lead with a two-run shot.
From The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles, today's guests: Pro Football Hall of Famer Kurt Warner, ESPN MLB announcer Boog Sciambi, actor Keegan-Michael Key. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
That's right. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, Disney Plus, the ESPN app everywhere, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. My Hall of Fame friend Kurt Warner is going to be first up here to talk about what we just saw and witnessed in week number 8. He called the radio call of Monday Night Football, of the Chiefs dispatching of the Washington Commanders. He's also, as you know, Mr. QB Confidential. He looks at every single piece of film that's out there. So we'll come through week 8. We'll preview week number 9 that starts on Thursday night between the Ravens and the Dolphins. And then tonight, game 5 of the World Series here in Los Angeles, California. It is one of those proverbial pivotal games as we are now tied at 2 games apiece. Boog Sciambi, who's calling that action for all of us on ESPN Radio, is going to join us in studio in hour number 2. And then in hour 3, I wouldn't miss it, the very funny and talented, hilarious, and awesome Keegan-Michael Key stops by in studio, and it's always an A-plus event when he does that. We have some fun in store and planned for him when he joins us in hour number 3. Good to see you over there, Chris Brockman. How are you, sir?
Rich, I'm excellent. How are you?
DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts, is back in his chair. Good to see you, sir. And TJ Jefferson, I see the candle's already lit over there. Good to see you.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. We also have a follow-up on what we discussed on yesterday's program about would you take your bestie to a game, like a playoff game,
or
like say a World Series game? Just would you take a good friend to a game if they are rooting for the team that is preventing your team that you're going to see from moving on in life? And guess what? Ashton Kutcher has, in fact, chimed in on that front because we talked about it yesterday. That's later on in this show. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We always love hearing from you. The World Series is now tied at 2 games apiece because the Toronto Blue Jays woke up on short rest and heard the entire free world talk about what a unicorn Shohei Ohtani is. And I don't know if they internalized it and said, to heck with that. Also, it helps when, their lineup is mostly intact. George Springer not in there, but it wasn't like the game was on the line and all of a sudden a bunch of guys who weren't starters were in the game because the game is now 19 and a half hours long and they're running out of baseballs. And they also had a pitcher of note of their own, albeit not an all-star, all-world hitter in his own right, but Shane Bieber had a lot to say about last night's action. Don't forget, he's a Cy Young Award winner. He's been there and done that, except a World Series start. And sure enough, when Shohei Ohtani stepped to the plate after getting the Blue Jays out in the top of the inning, he wasn't intentionally walked, although it looked like it was one of those intentional
sure.
walks, right?
Sure.
He did, in fact, get on base.
Accidentally on purpose.
To start the game for 10 consecutive plate appearances to put himself on base. But Bieber got out of that, and the Blue Jays wound up falling behind again, only to have Vlad Guerrero Jr. step to the plate and get a spinner of an Ohtani mistake right around the letters and he just smoked it into the left field stands.
New Jack City.
To give the Blue Jays a lead that they would not relinquish, because they are a team that is equipped to beat the Los Angeles Dodgers in a way last year's American League East opponent for the Dodgers in the World Series were not. Big to-do in New York City when Buck Martinez, longtime major leaguer and longtime Toronto Blue Jay announcer, said the Yankees weren't as good as the Blue Jays, or weren't as good as many people in the Yankee organization or New Yorkers thought that they were, because they don't put the ball in play. They strike out too much, and if they don't homer, they lose. And I understand last night the Blue Jays homered and won. But the Blue Jays keep showing you why they are a better team equipped to beat the Dodgers than last year's New York Yankees. And it's not just because they officially now have more wins in this World Series than the Yankees were able to get against the Dodgers last year. It's because the Blue Jays do put the ball in play. They've got guys who can get base hits, not just seeing eye base hits. They have guys who can come up with an extra base hit now and then, and also put the ball in play instead of striking out like most of the Yankees are. And I know I'm making it about another team right now. I'm just trying to compare and contrast the two teams that come from the AL East over the last 2 years to take on the Dodgers in a World Series. And the Yankees didn't last year, didn't have to deal with Ohtani being A, healthy, B, off the hook, and C, a pitcher. And, you know, Andrés Giménez was a perfect example last night. He's down in the count, winds up getting the count in his favor, and loops a base hit to left field instead of striking out. And guess what happened? The Blue Jays scored a run. And then the next guy gets up and has a productive out to knock another guy in. And then another guy gets a base hit, and then another guy has a productive out. And then you get into the Dodgers bullpen a day after the pen has been used excessively, and suddenly you can break this thing open a little bit. And Blake Treinen, who I think is maybe the last guy other than Tanner Scott that a Dodger fan wants to see in the game right now, he comes in and he gives up a couple of extra runs, and that's all she wrote. And the Blue Jays don't even have to use their closer, Jeff Hoffman, because they didn't want to if they didn't have to, because he pitched two innings the night before. So now they're kind of set up for tonight's game five. Now, obviously, the Dodgers didn't use Sasaki either last night, but the Blue Jays come away with the win against Ohtani when Ohtani is just as on fire as he could possibly be. And Dave Roberts admitted what we all do know, but sometimes it's tough for us to see, certainly in the media, that Shohei Ohtani is mortal.
He's mortal, but there's also a lot of energy, obviously, on the pitching exerted, but they made good pitches. You know, there were some backdoor cutters, some breaking balls, crowding him a little bit, and I thought his intent tonight at the plate was good, but, you know, you look back at those at-bats, they made good pitches on him. They really did.
Do you think it's unfair to put that much pressure on him, to expect him to do those extraordinary things every night?
You know, I know he doesn't see it as pressure. I would say that's what he expects from himself. It's part of, you know, being a fan and seeing great things from great players. So, you know, every time he steps up, I expect great things to happen, and maybe unfairly.
Okay, so the Blue Jays are now, even with the Dodgers in the series, they're 2-1 in World Series games that aren't wildly off the hook and take 90 hours to finish. So they got to feel good about themselves going into Game 5 tonight. And this is a fun World Series. I hope everybody very out there so, is tuning in. Certainly to ESPN Radio, Boog Sciombi's going to come in. Boog Sciombi's coming in hour number 2 to talk about it. And whether you're watching it or listening to it, this has been wildly entertaining. And George Springer, you know, John Schneider let everyone know during the broadcast last night, he thinks that it's possible that Springer could come back tonight.
Wow.
Which would be something else. Mr. October for a game 5 tonight in Chavez Ravine. Again, we'll talk about it in hour number 2 with Boog Sciombi in studio. Some NFL news to get to. It's very rare to see a big, fat contract signing announced in between weeks 8 and 9 of an NFL season. Usually, if it's not done before week one, it gets tabled for the rest of the season, but not in the case of the Lions and Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson, who at this very point last year was overcoming an injury that maybe Cam Scataboo is going to have to overcome. I'm not a doctor. I don't see any x-rays or MRI, and I wasn't in the operating room with Cam Scataboo in Philadelphia. Although Big Dom might have been. Do you think, did Big Dom scrub up for that one?
Wouldn't shock me. Big Dom can do anything.
Did you see, though, that he did stop by and give Scataboo some Philadelphia goodies?
Yeah, pizzas and cheesesteaks.
I love that.
Love it.
But at any rate, at this point last year, we're wondering when Aiden Hutchinson is going to come back, if at all, from a horrifying injury to his leg. And now, 1 year later, the Lions are 5-2, coming off of a bye, getting ready for the Minnesota Vikings at home. And Aiden Hutchinson has a new 4-year deal worth $181 million. Did I get that number right here? It just happened, but just before we came on the air here on our program.
Yeah, I think 180 and
180.
Yeah, 141.
141 is the guaranteed
guarantee.
A 4-year contract extension.
Yeah.
And all Aiden Hutchinson has done is just be awesome since coming off of the campus at Michigan. Obviously, I'm biased when it comes to him. He is a game changer. He was absolutely the first guy, along with in Harbaugh's program, to plant a flag and say it changes now. And he has been nothing but terrific for the Detroit Lions when healthy. Drafted second overall. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars let him go to the Detroit Lions, and choosing Javon Walker instead out of Georgia. And what he is an absolutely perfect avatar on the field for what Dan Campbell wants. Grit, determination, and unstoppable. He plays like he's coming for your kneecap after taking a bite of X, Y, and Z, right? And the Lions, as you can see, are spending. He is now the fourth guy on the team to have a 9-figure deal. Penei Sewell, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Jared Goff are the others. And also, the way that he has been balling out this year, you got to also be, I don't know if amazed or surprised is the proper word. It might be a little bit of an exaggeration. You know how negotiations go. I mean, at some point, they're a little bit spinning sideways. And it's just like if you've ever been fortunate enough to buy a house or a car, you think the deal's going to fall through. It's going to be over. Like, at least once, twice, three times in those deals, it looks like it's not happening. And he was able to just, nobody knew this was going on. I mean, I'm sure the insiders in Detroit might have known, or only the people inside the building.
Yeah, this kind of popped up out of nowhere today.
It's just very rare for it to happen. And just the latest example, I'm sorry to do it, but I have to do it. Anytime somebody at this position signs for the amount of money like this, and again, the guaranteed dollars are significant. I think about where Myles Garrett is today. You know, on his bye week with his team absolutely adrift. On their bye week at 2-6, coming off of a 5-sack game of New England's revelatory Drake May, sitting by himself at the end of the bench in New England with a team record that doesn't matter to him. You know, he's getting ready to put his tombstones on the front lawn. And, you know, one of those tombstones I'm sure that won't be out there was "Here lies the 2025 Cleveland Browns," because their season is particularly
cooked,
adrift. I'll be nice about it.
Better way of saying that. Yes.
And there's two guys now at this position, game changers, who Myles Garrett could sit here and say, I'm better than them, and I have been better for them than them for a very long time, longer than they've been in the league. You could stack both of them on top of each other in terms of the length of their careers, and it's, you know, the length of mine that I have been dominating since I came out of Texas A&M first overall for Cleveland, and they're now making more money than me, and they're 100% in the mix for the Super Bowl, and I am not. And I had my finger on the eject button, and I didn't press it. I stayed in Cleveland. And I'm just wondering what he's thinking wherever he is right now.
He's probably at Turks and Caicos on the beach.
No, I understand. Yeah. His life is great. He's set up forever. His descendants are set up forever. And he's also, regardless of if he does ever leave Cleveland, he's going to finish in Ohio.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, with a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's going to be one of those Hall of Famers who show up as a 50, 60-year-old man, knock on wood, who looks like he can still give you some snaps, and that gold jacket is going to fit him perfectly.
Him and Mel Blunt.
Yeah, Micah Parsons.
Aaron Donald Hutchinson. When he's there, too.
93 and a half career sacks combined. Miles Garrett, 112.5.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, that means that goes
we're not
saying.
Even talking about his resume or his in terms of being in doubt here. It's just
you'd like to see him get a different type of ring.
Sure.
You know.
And I'm sure he does too. And he had it set up. And for whatever reason, he decided not to do it. He might actually like it living in his house in Ohio and he didn't want to leave it, really. And he just wanted the bag. Well, he got the bag. But so now does Micah and Hutchinson. And on Thanksgiving Day, they're going to be on the same field in Detroit with the division and seeding for the conference on the line. And this is what I think of whenever I see these guys hit it like that. So congratulations to Hutchinson and the Lions for getting it done. And also to J.J. McCarthy, you're back. And there's a fellow Wolverine on the other side who's going to make your day long if he has anything to say about it on Sunday. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. I've got my power rankings. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, after beating the Knicks, Giannis Antetokounmpo is here in studio today off of just one dribble. He made it all. He traveled all the way to here. We'll talk about that. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Kurt Warner is going to join us next to break down what we saw in Week 8, what he saw on film, and preview Week 9.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more. We're back on the ESPN radio feed presented by Progressive Insurance. I just asked you, Kurt Warner, have you ever lost your confidence at any point in your career?
I never did, but there were definitely times where I questioned what I was doing because, there's times you go through stretches. You know, I remember kind of my last year, starting with the Rams, started, six or seven games, that season before an injury. And it was like, three touchdowns and like 11 interceptions in that short period of time. And I would go back and I would watch the tape and I would go, okay, what could I have done different? Should I have done something differently? If I was doing this all over again, or if I was somebody that was, not in my shoes and just watching this, would I tell my quarterback to do something different? And, obviously there were times that obviously you go, yeah, it's a dumb decision. But for the most part, it was just like, this is crazy. I'm completing almost 70% of my passes, seven out of every 10 passes. It just seems like every time I make a mistake, it's an interception. And, I've dealt with the same thing with my son, EJ, is that, man, he can play great football and we can talk about it. And then He's like, Dad, but every time one thing goes a little bit off, instead of the ball hitting the ground, it finds its way into the hands of the opponent. And so I've gone through stretches like that where you struggle with, why is this happening? And how is this happening? And is there really something I could do differently? And every time I went back and studied myself, I always came to the same conclusion, is that sometimes things just don't bounce your direction, you know, whether that's, you know, a little bit something off with your communication with your wide receiver, or every time the ball's tipped, it gets intercepted instead of hitting the ground, or, you know, you're anticipating something and the defense does something a little bit differently that you don't really know until you throw the football. And so there's just, you know, so many things that go into it. And I think that's part of that confidence thing, is you have to be able to realistically go back and watch what you're doing. And when I say realistically, you have to be able to say, you know what, that was a bad decision, and this is why that's a bad decision, and you have to avoid that decision. And then on the other side, you have to be able to go, you know what, I would do that every single time, and I know it didn't work out there, and I know it ended up in the hands of the opponent, but that's how I've always played, and I understand why I did it, and I would do it again. And so you have to be able to go out there and go, I'm not going to worry about that part of it. You know, there's just so many different aspects that go into it, because, you know, you can talk about, you know, I was talking about the interceptions that happened in the Monday night game, you know, and, you know, late in the game, Marcus Mariota throws an interception as they're trying to come back. And, you know, there's things like that too, where it's like, I would never make that throw in a regular situation, but when I'm down two touchdowns late in the game, I've got to put the ball in harm's way a little bit more and try to make a tight throw a little bit more than I would otherwise. So you also have to take into consideration the situational football and what was presented to you. And so I think there's so many elements that go into it, but if you don't have a realistic viewpoint of what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong, I think it's easy to get kind of mixed up and mess with your confidence, either being overconfident, thinking, oh, it doesn't matter, just keep doing what you're doing. Yeah, that can't always be the right decision. And then other times to get tentative when you really shouldn't be tentative, and you've got to just let it rip and play because you're not necessarily playing bad football.
Kurt Warner here on the Rich Eisen Show, my NFL Game Day morning compadre, and also QB Confidential is his spot on YouTube. Check it out. It will make you smarter. Listen, in terms of all impressive performances, Let's hit Jordan Love here. You just got to sit here and wonder, Kurt, when he's sitting there waiting for Rodgers to be done with his job, essentially, right? I mean, it's just one way to put it, right? Mm-hmm. Waiting for his shot, waiting for the time where they were going to turn to him. He had to think to himself, at some point, I'm going to start here. At some point, Rodgers is going to go somewhere and still be the Hall of Fame Aaron Rodgers, and I'm going to maybe play against him. I'm going to be on the same field as him. And for him to have that opportunity on Sunday Night Football and come up with a 360-yard, three-touchdown, no-interception performance that included 20 straight completions to make him, as he was just named 20 minutes ago, NFC Offensive Player of the Week, what a dream come true for him, right? Honestly.
No doubt about it. And I tell you what was most impressive to me was the way that he played that game. You know, if there's been one thing that we talked about with Jordan Love, I talked about it with him, you know, on our sit down on game day morning, just about the gunslinger mentality, is that he's kind of got that gunslinger mentality. Like, I can make the big throw and I can make the big play. And there's been stretches in his career where he's tried to do that and force some balls and thrown some interceptions. And so here he is on the biggest stage, you know, in this moment, like you're talking about, you know, wanting to show everybody, hey, you know, the Packers made the right decision at that time to go with me, all of that stuff. And I thought he played so well with it. I mean, there were even times in this game where I thought, man, why didn't he push that down the field? You know, like, I thought he had an opportunity, yet he was playing a very intelligent, smart football game. He didn't let the hype and he didn't let all of this, I got to outperform Aaron Rodgers and I got to show people on a big stage, you know, all of that stuff. It was, no, I just need to go out and play the perfect game for my team. And he was taking checkdowns and taking the shorter throws and not forcing things down the field for the most part. And so I was just really impressed with the maturity on that side of it. Cause I mean, I've been in those situations where You want to go out and you want to throw for 360 yards and three touchdowns, and you want to do it in wow fashion, and you want to make big play after big play, and you can get outside yourself at times. And I thought he handled that game perfectly, made the throws he was supposed to make, didn't put the ball in harm's way, didn't try to do too much. And in doing that, he shined brighter than anybody else on the field.
And then in terms of Rodgers, I mean, we established on NFL Game Day morning this Sunday, you know, for those who missed it, you, Kurt, were showing some wow throws from Rodgers that looked like he's turning back the clock. And he's also moving out of the pocket in those same ways. That said, just struggling in the red zone, the high red zone.
Yeah.
And what ails the Steelers' offense right now, Kurt?
I mean, what ails them for me is playing on schedule and on time. And, you know, whether that's just looking at the weapons and the offense and being able to create some easy opportunities within structure and within their scheme. I think Aaron continues to be a little uncomfortable in the pocket. You know, what I showed on Sunday was a couple of those big throws from inside the pocket that I hadn't seen earlier in the year. And it was kind of like, man, you're hoping that maybe he's getting more comfortable with his guys and in this offense, so he's more comfortable in the pocket. But I think there's some missed opportunities on schedule. I think there's some lack of opportunities on schedule. And so a lot is falling on Aaron to have to be more creative, or you know, forcing him to be more impatient in the pocket and wanting to get out of the pocket, and where he's been really good, whether it's the design naked bootlegs or whether it's him creating on the out of the pocket, he's been really good in that facet. I just think they have to get better on schedule. That's Aaron starting, you know, being comfortable and making some of those reads and throws, and it's scheme wise and it's player wise creating some opportunities on schedule, because it's just, I don't care who you are, doesn't matter what player you are, trying to live in an off-schedule world in the NFL does not work very often. They can work three or four times a game, and it can be great, but it is hard for it to work for 60, 65 snaps a game for 60 minutes. So they've got to get better on schedule in their passing game.
It's Kurt Warner Wednesday right here on the Rich Eisen Show. All right, Kurt, you saw and called the first Chiefs game of the year. I was next to you. You saw and called the latest Chiefs game. I imagine it's Kevin Harlan sitting next to you for the national radio call. I don't think there's any question the Chiefs have turned the corner. It's now about how far they're going to go. And what a big game this Sunday against the Bills. Yeah. Walk me through how you see the 10th all-time meeting between Mahomes and Josh Allen going, and how they need to play to win. Kurt.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Chiefs. They're just back to doing what they've been doing for the last couple years. And it's a really hard thing to stop, because it's hard to create negative plays against them, you know, because their offense is so much, you know, short throws, yards after catch, finding creative ways to get their players the ball in space. And so if you can't get them in negative situations where you force them to have to hold the football and throw it down the field, they are a tough team to stop, because, you know, Patrick's as good as anybody at dealing the football and creating positive plays when there's not a lot there. I'll even say this, is that I don't think Patrick is playing his best football yet. Now, he's playing great off schedule, but in that game on Monday night, I thought there was a number of opportunities in front of him, you know, within the scheme of the offense that he missed. But, you know, the offensive line gave him time, and when you give him time, there's nobody better off schedule than Patrick Mahomes. And I feel like a lot of this season he's been playing more off schedule than on schedule, and part of it was because of the issues early on and the lack of comfort with the guys around him. But, you know, that's the amazing thing, is that they're playing well. And, you know, Patrick's playing great, you know, off schedule, and those guys work so well together. They got their weapons back. But I think they could even be better. Like, I think they're going to get more comfortable, and Patrick's going to settle back in more, because he's gotten into this mode of having to create more, I think, over the last year and a half. And it's taken him a little bit away from, you know, some of the things that he does really well in terms of processing and seeing and getting the ball out on time, that I think this team can get even better than they are right now. And so it's pretty amazing with what we saw week one in Brazil to the way that they flip things now. And I think most people see them as the team to beat in the AFC, even though they just, you know, snuck into the playoff picture. I think it's going to be ascension from here. And then on the other side with Buffalo, I like what they did last week, of course, you know, the big win and getting back to running the football and establishing the run. You know, Josh is another guy that I believe is playing too fast this year. I think Josh is awesome when he plays on schedule and in the pocket, and he settles in the pocket and reads it and throws it. I feel like he's gotten really impatient. And again, is it the weapons on the outside and the lack of, you know, the ability to create separation? But there's oftentimes where you'll see him drop back, and it's almost as soon as his back foot hits on the top of his drop where he's moving, and his feet go sideways, and he's looking to run or you know, or get on the move instead of letting the play work for him. And so I think he's got to do the same thing. He's got to settle back in and trust the offense in front of him. I think part of that is, you know, getting back to running the football, which made them so good a year ago, that it wasn't all about Josh Allen making plays. But yeah, I think he's got to slow things down a little bit and get back to playing some of that MVP football that we saw a year ago.
Who was the quarterback when you were playing, Kurt, that you knew leading up to the week, I need to have my best game, period, end of story, because I know he is too, in the same way that potentially both Allen and Mahomes are thinking about this week? Who was that guy for you, Kurt?
Yeah, I mean, I mean all the great ones. Like anytime you went against the guys, you know, that would be, you know, the Mannings and, you know, Favre at the beginning of, you know, of my career.
Well, Favre's because the Packers cut you too, right, Kurt? I mean, like that was, there was a little bit of an edge to that one. Technically,
It's always an edge.
Come
to that
on,
one.
I want one. Like one guy that you knew, because honestly, Allen and Mahomes know right now, with all due respect to everyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, Lamar's maybe another one.
Yeah,
in the AFC.
I don't know if I had a matchup like that. I mean, for me, it was more certain defenses. And so for me, it was like when I went up against Tampa's defense that I knew that the only chance we had to win was if I played, you know, my best game. And, you know, that was to me more the matchup. I didn't have a Brady Manning type matchup or, you know, like you're talking about Mahomes against Allen. Right. I didn't have something like that was ongoing necessarily in my career, especially as I bounced to some different teams. So me, it was, you know, like I said, any great quarterback coming in, you knew you were going to have to play well. But for me, because of the style that we played, I think it was more, okay, the great defenses, and specifically that Tampa defense, when I played against them, you know, I knew that was the game I had to lock in and knew I had to play well if we were going to win.
So it was more Saps, Brooks, Lynch, Barber than Sean King.
Yes. Okay. Definitely. Okay. In that situation.
Poor
yes.
Sean King. I'm dragging Kurt down to my level, right? Just Sean King, somewhere going, wait a minute.
Yeah. A needless drive.
What's that all about?
Yeah, how'd I get into this, that's right? My name to drop?
Oh, man. Listen, we always talk about quarterbacks under pressure here, Kurt, right? And my philosophy is a quarterback most under pressure is when, A, he's got to prove something, to B, save his job. That there potentially might not be another year. I don't know if that's the case for J.J. McCarthy, because the Vikings have clearly committed to him by not giving Sam Darnold, I guess, the term and dollar, or Daniel Jones, and that's the conversation we're seeing. And Sam's 5-2, and Daniel Jones is 7-1. That's the backdrop here of him coming back and now taking the Lions. What's your expectation and two cents of advice you have for McCarthy, Kurt, do you think here?
Well, it's such a unique situation, Rich, because we often know that, you know, when a young guy gets drafted high and often in the first round with a team, the team's not usually very good. And so you get that year, you know, maybe like a Caleb Williams or a Drake May, you get that year to, you know, go through your own growing pains and, you know, to struggle through some things and learn and grow as a quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, the unfortunate thing with JJ was that this team won 14 games a year ago, and they got rid of the quarterback that won 14 games, and they put their trust in you. And so we don't give this kid's got no chance to have a year of growing pains, because we know what this team was a year ago, and all they've changed, so to speak, is the quarterback. And so all this pressure is on him to have to play really, really well right off the bat. And so I don't look at it that way. I don't come into this and say, man, I expect JJ to go through some growing pains. I expect him to go through some of those rookie issues that I saw, you know, quite frankly, the first couple games when he played. You know, for Kevin O'Connell to have to make some adjustments on how he calls a game, you know, that it can't be, you know, he's so used to it being QB centric and around Justin Jefferson and throwing the football and doing all of that. Well, you know, maybe you can't do that right off the bat with JJ McCarthy in his first year starting. And so I think there's a lot of transition going on here that we need to understand, but it's hard to understand because all we want to look at is a 14-win team and a quarterback that played there last year that's lighting it up in Seattle. And did Minnesota make the wrong decision? Well, let's just give him some time. I mean, you know, maybe he plays like Drake May does next year, you know, in his second year with the team. And now we're forgetting about all of that, and it doesn't really matter. But I think he was against the eight ball, you know, from the drop. I think he's got room to grow and a ways to go before we can really know who he's going to be at this level. But you're exactly right. There is pressure on him because of all the things that I talked about. And to me, it's undue pressure to expect him to step in his first year and just, you know, pick up where Sam Darnold left off last year. But that's how we're going to continue to look at it, you know, one way or another, whether JJ becomes, you know, a great player or not. Right now, this is the narrative. Or if he doesn't become a great player in this league, we're going to look back at this moment, you know, and talk about what did Minnesota do and did they make the right decision and all of those different things. But I just feel like he's in a really, really tough spot and was from, you know, from the get-go this year, because any first-year starting quarterback to have that kind of pressure on him is just an unfair proposition.
In the final minute with you, Kurt, my usual question, who wins the best All-22 Tape of the Week award from Week 8? From you, is it Jordan?
Yeah, well,
Love?
We already was it Jordan. We Love? Talked about Jordan Love. He okay. He would have definitely been up there, but I would actually put Bo Nix up there. Now, okay. Caveat is he played against Dallas's defense, uh-oh, so I'm not sure they covered anybody all day long.
Oh boy!
But regardless, you know, you can only play against the teams you play against, and I thought Bo played really well. You know, I'd kind of been clamoring, and you know, even when we called the game a couple weeks ago, you know, so much of their offense is like, you know, bubble screens and quick throws and all this stuff. I want to see them push the ball down the field and, you know, kind of open up their offense and let the young man, you know, wing it around a little bit and build a rhythm. And they did that in this game. They threw the ball down the field. He made some really great throws. I thought he looked really good. I thought it was his best game of the year. I thought, you know, when I watched the tape, that he made more big-time throws than anybody else in the league this past weekend.
Well, he messed with Texas at home. Now he's got to go to Houston and see what happens there this week. Kurt, thank you for the time, yeah, sir. Really appreciate it. You're the
all
best.
Right, buddy. See you this Sunday. Weekend.
See you this week. And QB Confidential, everybody, check it out on YouTube. That's Kurt Warner in his usual Wednesday spot. When we come back, some housekeeping about the friend that you take to your plus one to a must-win game. Oh, boy, this will be fun.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Keep your career moving forward. Visit careers.progressive.com. So, TJ Jefferson, Kurt Warner on the Dallas Cowboys just went, you got to play the teams that you you got to beat the teams in front of you about the Dallas Cowboys defense.
Which kind of hurt me because I'm always defending Kurt with the way you kind of like, you know, always backhand compliment him. And I'm always like, leave Kurt alone.
Cardinals Cowboys is Monday night. Do you think if Kurt suited up for Arizona, he could throw for 300 yards against this Cowboy defense?
Listen, he just went on the Cowboys defense when about looking at the All-22, said they didn't cover anybody, and about how Bo Nix looked great, and he said about the Cowboys defense, what you normally say about an 0-7 or a 1-6 team, like, you just got to play the teams that's in front of you.
I mean, you don't need to be an All-22 guy to pick that out, though.
I'm just bringing this up because of the prideful nature of the Dallas Cowboy fan in front of you. And when we were looking at Game 3 of the World Series and seeing all the celebrities out there, And I saw how Jason Bateman, celebrity Dodger fan, was with Sean Hayes and that terrific Smartless podcast that he does, Jason, with Sean Hayes. The third guy in the mix is Will Arnett. And there was some supposition online, social media, et cetera, that the reason why Sean Hayes got the plus one over Will Arnett is that Will Arnett is a Blue Jay fan. And I said, if that's the case, then I salute Jason Bateman, because if it's ever a do or die playoff game between the Yankees and the Red Sox, and I have a plus one, last person I'm inviting is you, Chris.
I fully on board with that.
And you agreed with the same thing. If you had a plus one, you're not inviting a Yankee fan to sit next to you and root for the team that's making you miserable.
Absolutely not.
And you, TJ, said if it, I said to you, you push back. Yeah. I'm like, what if the Bears and the Cowboys play, an NFC championship game? Mm-hmm. You know, would Ashton invite you as a plus one? You said 100%, 1 million he would do it. I mean, and you would do it for him.
Ain't even a question, like Ja Rule said.
And I said, you got to ask Ashton about it. And he was unable to respond yesterday and said he can't appear today live because he's traveling.
Yeah.
So he recorded his answer to this question, and here it is.
Okay. I was listening to the show yesterday. 1,000%. If I had two tickets and the Bears were playing the Cowboys, 1,000%, I would take TJ. No questions asked. In fact, he should expect that if he couldn't afford the plane ticket, I'd pay for the plane ticket. The whole point of having a team, having friends, is to root against each other. If the Bears are playing the Cowboys, I want to see TJ in as much pain as he can possibly be in. That is the delay. It's funny when friends get hurt. That was a line from that 70s show. I believe in it. Kelso said it.
He did.
Kelso speaks truths. I can't control the weather, and it's funny when friends get hurt. Now, as far as Bateman and Arnett and the Dodgers game, which I was at, by the way, and I brought my wife, my best friend. Look, maybe they're not that good of friends. We don't know. We don't know. If it was really a Blue Jay Dodger thing, and by the way, I'm not trying to start rumors. I'm not trying to start gossip. I don't know anything. I have no information. Because there is a tier, right? Like, I would say, like, my top tier friends, like, wow. Top list. Like, there's about 5-6 people on it. Tier one, if I'm playing your team in the Super Bowl, you're coming with me. For sure. Two tickets, you're coming. Tier two? I bleed orange and blood is thicker than water. Tier two. Tier one, you're coming with me. That's all there is to it. So there it is. So, I mean, TJ only tells truths. That's all I'm just saying. My guy TJ tells truths.
I mean, look.
Tier one, TJ, we knew that already.
I mean, you think he That's wouldn't funny. When he would?
So, okay, so,
what
so
are we doing?
I understand that you know you want to see your friends miserable.
I do understand that.
But, you know, and I just have been around enough, though, that doesn't matter the amount of confidence I have in my team. Mm-hmm. What if it doesn't turn out to be a good day and my confidence is misguided? Now you're there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see you there.
Oh,
don't I don't.
Come on now.
No, I don't want to see
it. Right? No. Like, I'll call you later when I'm over it.
Then what's the point of that?
In like a week.
I need to be there.
Am I?
You guys are bad friends.
That's where I bring it. Like the tiering of the friends thing.
I mean, that's, remember my tier system about arguing football with you? Like, yeah, there's a friendship tier system.
No, I understand. You used to have a tier about whether you as a Cowboy fan would argue football with you. Like, you needed to have at least a Super Bowl appearance or had a shot at it.
Yeah, some people who ain't never sniffed the Super Bowl can't talk trash.
I am sorry. I don't care what tier you are at all. I am not going to have you root against my team in front of me in a seat that I'm providing you. End of story.
Like I said, man, you don't have...
End of story.
Friends, how many of us have them?
No, I've got tier ones.
I don't know, man. Apparently not.
Well, they root for the same team as you.
I mean, yeah. Call us, 844-204-RICH. Number to dial on that front. Boog Shambi is coming up to talk about the World Series.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.